guest today is Alon Day. He's the NASCAR Euro Series most winning driver. He's won 4 championships in the Monster Energy car. He's the Israeli Athlete of the Year, and he's truly the guy to beat in that series over in Europe. Enjoy. So how was your race season?
It wasn't too bad, you know. I won the 4th championship.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's a big accomplishment, you know. Being the most amount of championships, I think, in this championship. So,
for sure. When did the Euro Series start?
You mean established?
Yeah, the NASCAR Euro Series, yeah.
I think in 2012. Before that, it was something called a race car championship. It was just a stock car running on normal tracks, Formula One tracks in Europe. And then they changed the name and got, like, you know, the name, the NASCAR Wheel and Euro Series. And until today, it's the same sponsor, same everything. So, and it's growing really fast. I think this is one of the most growing championship right now in Europe.
Yeah. It seems like, you know, to have the name NASCAR behind it. And then obviously you guys have been putting on such good shows, like such good races. And compared to sports car racing, I'm assuming it's reasonable as far as cost goes. And then this year, did you guys run any ovals, or did they just road courses?
Yeah, just road courses. And you said reasonable budget, you know. And I think this is the biggest thing. I think people are fed up with the new championships, like the GT3, the balance of performance, you know, it always going into such a really deep political things, like with the BOP, the balance of performance, when you take a Ferrari and, you know, change the horsepower and the weight and everything just to balance everybody together. And it becomes really complicated, and you need it's just almost impossible. And people really start to like the NASCAR because they realize there is a really cheap, you know, but a cheap championship that people running the same car, 40 cars on the grid, and, you know, V8, they love it.
Yeah. No, I've been saying that for years, like with the Canadian series, it's a no-brainer. And the Canadian series as well as the Euro series, you're on TV, it's the name NASCAR, and you're racing against legends. You know, you guys raced against Bobby Labonte and Jacques Villeneuve, and I think Villeneuve raced with us a little bit too. So I mean, you know, you're racing against guys who have made a living in the sport for the last however many years. You know, it certainly helps. And then you have the ability to go and find sponsorship. I mean, look at you. You've got Monster Energy as a sponsor now.
Yeah, that's a big deal, I think, also for the NASCAR in Europe, you know. I think this is the first time that you can see a full sponsored car in any motorsports in Europe, I think.
Right, yeah, because
if I think about it deeply, I think I'm the only fully sponsored car in those type of racing, you know. No, I'm not talking about drifting and things like that.
Right. So let's I want to jump back to your childhood and growing up and the, you know, your beginnings in racing. Were you born in Israel?
Yeah, I am. Born and raised, and I'm still here, and I will be here.
Okay. So no plans, unless you get a full-time cup ride, no plans to move from Israel.
I've done it too many times, and I think that's it. I'm fed up of moving, changing countries, living in different places. Now I got married now, so, you know, I need to be a bit more, responsibility for my life and my wife.
Yeah.
It's a bit more complicated. I prefer to stay here in Israel. And also I'm like growing my own business, my own racing team right now. So it's a different role, different story, and new challenges.
Tell me about that. What are you doing there?
Yeah, so basically you started with my childhood, but when I grew up here in Israel, we had zero motorsports, like none. No racetracks, no race cars, anything. It was just like go-karts. That was the only championship that we had here in Israel, the only kind of motorsports that we had here in Israel. And we also ran in like, you know, kind of like half street tracks, you know, like temporary tracks that
yep.
We just build the day before and start racing. And today, like, I don't know, 2 decades after I started, we have like 3 racetracks, pretty decent, and a couple of championships that are growing up. So there is like a vacuum here in Israel of people that really wanted motorsport for so many years. And from the moment we have motorsports and it's legalized, it was illegal before, there is a big impact on the motorsports here. And it was the right moment for me to build, establish my own racing team. In a Peugeot, it's Peugeot 206 Cup, which is a really slow car, but still, you know, it's still a racing team, and I still have my own drivers, and I still need to manage, you know, between them, and at the same time also drive my own race car. So,
oh, that's cool, and that's all within Israel as a sports car series.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's like a touring car, you know, like the cheapest touring car you can get. You just take a normal road car, front wheel drive, up to like 140 horsepower,
mm-hmm.
and you strip it, you put a roll cage, and you know, you build your own race car. So it is also challenging, you know, to find, because the regulations here is like extremely open. So you basically can do whatever you want. You need to like develop your own tricks and find your own stuff.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. We'll jump back to that later on. But going back to your childhood, paint a little bit of a picture for everyone listening what your upbringing was like. Like, what did your parents do for a living? You know, were you upper class, middle class? Where did you live? You know, most people listening to this are from the States or Toronto, so it'll be pretty foreign to them.
Yeah, so I'm born in 91 in Israel. Born and raised, as I said, in Israel, to, I think, middle-class family. I'm the youngest out of 4 boys. So I have 3 big brothers. And I think this is the thing that really shaped me as a child, because I always wanted to be like my big brothers. And I always wanted to watch what they watch on TV, like whether it's the A-Team, MacGyver, or, you know, those kind of stuff. And I think this is what really got me into motorsports. I wanted to be like them. And we always had some kind of, you know, cars and trucks and things like that in our motorcycles. So this is the thing that really got me into motorsports.
So I assume it started for you as far as competition goes in a go-kart. How did that come about?
When I was 10 years old, yeah, I wanted that because I really like, I started watching Formula One, and I saw, like, at that time it was Michael Schumacher and winning everything. I remember myself like watching the TV and said, like, I want to be like him. And I started to, like, you know, telling my parents that I really want to go for a go-kart ride and things like that. And the first time I went into go-kart, I was pretty quick, and they didn't realize at that time how deep I will go with that thing in my head.
Right. So did they buy you a go-kart and you went racing?
So here it's a bit different. I started with like rental go-karts, you know, those
yep.
4-stroke stuff. And when I was, I think when I was 13, they got me like a bar mitzvah present. And it was my first go-kart. It was a 100cc Yamaha 2-stroke. And yeah, that was the beginning of the story.
So I assume the go-karting progresses to Europe. Like are you racing in Israel, and then, okay, I need to expand and compete against more competitive guys. And do you go to Europe with the go-kart?
Yeah. So, I won the Israeli championship back in 2005, I think. And at that moment, I realized if I'm not going up to Europe, I have no chance to to get any progress in my career. And I'm fortunate enough that my father realized it too, and sent me to Europe. And we start, he was together with me, start racing in England and Germany and Holland. And yeah, it was a tough experience, I have to say. Go-kart is such a different story compared to anything you will experience in racing, in my opinion. And especially in Europe, the drivers, the atmosphere, the things that you need to learn so quick. I came from a championship that, you know, you don't touch anybody. And I think it's also the same what happened to me with in NASCAR. You know, I came from a championship. You're touching each other, is not rubbing, you know, bumping is not allowed. And then you jump into a championship. At that time it was in go-karts in Europe, and people are extremely aggressive, and you need to deal with, like, I don't know, 40 people that bump each other. And the only experience I had the same was the first race in Xfinity when I had in Mid Ohio, and then I was like, well, this is almost like my go-kart when I was childhood.
Right. It's funny. I same thing Lance Stroll said to me. He said, you know, racing in Canada and then in the States a little bit, and when I guess they sent him over to race go-karts in Europe, and he was like, I got smashed off the track every single session.
Yeah, it's tough to adapt, you know, and it's the other way around. If you take a European driver and put him in an oval stock car and oval track, the amount of fear that the driver will have, I think, is extremely high.
So, you know, you're competing in go-karting, and then it's a big jump as financially, commitment, everything to cars. How does that come about? And kind of, I guess, to back it up, though, when do you say to your dad or your parents, hey, I really want to do this for a living, I think it's possible?
I think we both realized it after my first Formula Renault season, when I had I did a couple of tests on Formula Renault at that time. I think it's the same equals Formula 4. And I realized I'm good enough to start racing, and we are not extremely rich family. We realized that our only opportunity to really rise and have a good season was in Asia. So I started racing in the Asian Championship.
Right.
I said that right? I don't know if I said
Asian. Yeah. The Asian Formula Renault, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yep.
And I won my first season. So I think that moment, I never came up to my father and said, like, listen, I'm going to make money out of it or something like that. And we just realized it together, and we always work to find sponsor. And, you know, growing up in a country that have zero motorsports, it's almost impossible also to convince a company to sponsor you. You know, you need to tell the whole story, which is almost impossible if the country don't have the motorsports, you know.
Right. So, did you find a lot of your sponsors in Israel?
No, actually I barely had like sponsors until I was 20.
Okay.
18, I guess. 18. After I won the Asian Formula Renault when I was 18, I got a couple of sponsors, especially racing in the Asian Championship.
Mm-hmm.
But when I jumped back to Europe, I had none. It was full family backing at that time, and, you know, until today, I'm grateful for that, you know.
For sure. So you're kind of running, you know, Formula 4, and then I quickly looked through your bio, but I don't understand the whole story of the open seater stuff. Was the goal to go race open seater, like Formula 1 or IndyCar or something like that at the time?
Yeah, I mean, Formula 1 was the goal at that time. I won the Formula Renault, and then I went back to Europe and started racing in the German Formula 3, which at that time was a pretty decent championship. You can see a lot of Formula 1 drivers that we all raced against each other. And yeah, so the target was there, but it was extremely tough also going back to Germany to Europe and start racing again in the European environment.
Just because of how competitive everyone was in the driving style?
I think more than that, I think the biggest problem was the budget,
Mm.
because I always came with my family budget, and you cannot afford the best team and the best equipment. And something that I really learned in my career after so many years is that if you want to really succeed in motorsports, you always have to go to the best team. It costs a lot of money, but you need to be there, unless you have no opportunity, you have no chance to win against those guys. And so I think at that time when I was in Formula 3, the team wasn't, well, I'm a driver, I always blame the team. If something went wrong, it's the team. But yeah, it
Yeah.
was a tough couple of years in Formula 3.
And then I saw that you did a few Indy Lights races. How did that deal come about?
So after the Formula 3, I finished fourth in the German Championship. And then, again, as an Israeli, Jewish Israeli, it's extremely hard to find sponsor here in Israel, and it's even harder to find sponsors in Europe.
Hmm.
We realized, me and my father, that maybe our best opportunity is to go to the States and find Jewish companies, or in the Jewish community in general,
Right.
and try to find some money and some sponsorship. So I did half a se I went actually I moved to the US in the middle of my military time. I was a soldier at that time, and I did a half a season in Indy Lights back in 2012. And after that, we couldn't afford that anymore.
Okay, let me back you up there, 'cause again, that would be foreign for anyone in North America to hear your mandatory military time.
Yeah.
How many years is mandatory military time in Israel?
Boys, 3 years, girls, 2 years.
And did you specialize in anything, or is it?
No, not really. Well, before the military, when you're still in high school, you go through like different kind of tests, and then the military give you the option what you want to be or what you can be. So I did a lot of tests before, and I was like really wanted to be a fighter pilot at that time. So I
Right.
had two options: if I go full throttle to the military life and try to be a fighter pilot, or I will be a special athlete, and trying to get a career in motorsports, and I choose motorsports.
Right. So, when you moved to the States, did they were fine with that? They gave you some time off the military?
Yeah, so it's mandatory to have to do 3 years. I did 2 years, and then I was the soldier with the most amount of days out of Israel. So like I spent so much time in Europe at that time, and they realized and they said like, okay, take a break of 3 years, try to develop your career, and we will come back to you after like 4 years, or I think 3 years or something like that. And I thought, all right, sweet, that's a good deal. Probably they will forget me in 3 years. They will never remember me. And when
Yeah.
I was 20, on my 23rd birthday, they sent me, I don't know how you call it, like you have to go back to the military.
Oh
What's the
yeah.
name of it? When you recruit you again or something like
Yeah,
that.
yeah, yeah. Subscription. Yeah.
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 And back when I was 23 years old, I went back to the military, and I was a soldier like everybody else. All my friends are already, students and things like that, and I'm still a soldier. So yeah, that was a tough story with the military, but it's a mandatory things to do. And especially when you grow up in a country that's, always in some sort of war and constant need to defend ourselves. If you don't complete 3 years, people will look at you like you try to, get
Yeah.
away with the military. You're not real patriotic Israeli or whatever. So it was really important also for me to finish the army and to do my own duty.
Right, for sure. Now, So you come back from Indy Lights, and then you go back to Europe, and what do? Sports car stuff?
So I came back from the States, and then I went immediately to GT3. I started testing GT different cars of GT3 cars. And then I realized at that time that I must go to the best team, and I did. I did go to the, I went and signed with the best team that there is in GT3, and we had an extremely good season. I really love GT cars in general. I think it suits me better as a driver, a car that have more movement than open wheel. And I really rise in GT3. I think that was one of the best years in my career. I went back to Europe. I lived in Germany at that time, and it was good years.
Right. So you've lived in Germany for over a couple years just to pursue
In
racing.
general, yeah, I think I did like 2 years or 3 years in Germany.
Wow.
I think
So,
two and a half in total.
right. So you're racing sports cars. How does the NASCAR Euro Series come about or come onto your radar? And I guess to back it up again, how are you perceiving your potential career at this time? How are you wrapping your head around making a living, potentially being a race car driver?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, even at that time, it was almost impossible to see the opportunity to make money out of racing at that time. When I started driving with the on the Mercedes GT3, the SLS GT3, in the World Championship, and we had a good season. We finished fourth in the championship standing, and I knew that my only goal in my life is to be a factory driver. That any kind of manufacturer will sign me with a deal that I will be a factory driver, and that was my goal. That was my dream, and that was my only way to actually make money out of racing. I didn't thought about NASCAR and bringing my own sponsors, and I think in 2014, I raced in the German GT3 Championship, and I thought I'm on a fast way to be a factory driver. And in the end of the year, in the start of 2015, March 2015, which is already too late in a year, I realized that I have no seat anymore in Mercedes. They lost a big sponsor and things like that, and I had to like find my own. I have no seat. I need to find something
Right.
to do.
At the beginning of the race season.
At the beginning of March, like this is extremely late. Like why now? And I felt like this is the end of my career. Like I spoke with my parents, and I told them that I think it's done. I don't see any opportunity for us to continue with motorsports. And I just start, sending messages to anyone in the world, like sending emails to some kind of teams in different championships in Australia, in Japan, whatever. I just somebody with a available seat to do something. And one team from the NASCAR, the Wheel and Euro Series, offered me to come to Italy and make a test with a NASCAR. And I already in my mind, I'm not a driver anymore. I'm not a race car driver anymore. I took the decision. I'm done. I'm just doing it for fun. I will just shoot some emails. Let's see what happened. And I went to Italy. I did a test, and it was extremely good. And we signed the deal, and look at it from today. Look back at 2015. That really changed flipped my career totally, because I finished in my first ever year in NASCAR. I finished vice champion. I was after that, chosen to be together with you in the NASCAR Next, which was a good publicity for me as a driver from Europe. And obviously, I did the races in Xfinity, in trucks, and in Cup, and so this. if I wouldn't send those emails like crazy, I don't think I would we'll talk now, you know.
Yeah, that's a great story. That's a great story. So you had really kind of given up on your career, and it was a last ditch effort. Wow.
My mind was not here anymore. Like I thought about going to travel around the world or do something, like a normal person, you know.
Right. How, when you meet someone new day to day and you tell them that you race NASCAR, how is that received in Israel?
Oh, those guys that just turn left.
Yeah.
That's the reaction. This is
Yeah.
all they know. Oh, those guys that turn left. Yeah, it's hard to explain, but people are getting it slowly.
Right.
Obviously, Formula One will always be the main thing here in Israel, but slowly I will push it into the media.
Right. Now, you mentioned when you've done a couple of cup races, Xfinity and truck stuff. From my perspective, because I think the Canadian NASCAR and the Euro cars are pretty similar, it's a big difference going to those cars with the truck arm and the radial tire. Did you struggle, or did you find it a lot different to drive?
It is a big difference, especially when I my first ride in Xfinity. That was my first time in stock car in America, and I realized that the cars are totally different. But eventually, after all, it's you know 4 wheels, steering wheel, and an engine. So just you need to adapt yourself to something unfamiliar. You know, I never drove a car that's when I turn the front inside wheel will, you know, come up in the air. Like
Yeah.
something, it's a weird feeling. I never felt that before. You know, I used to drive either highly downforce cars, open wheels, or you know, GT and those kind of cars. You always stuck to the ground, and suddenly, you know, you jump on over the a curb in mid Ohio, and you find yourself like 1 meter in the air, or whatever is your measurement.
Probably a foot, probably a foot.
Yeah,
Yeah. Yeah, no, I found they were just totally different, because like the Euro car and the Canadian car, you can drive as hard as you want and then kind of gather it up and still do a good co like have a really good corner. Whereas the truck, for example, or the Xfinity car, if you overdrove it or drove it too hard, you were junk. Like you were just slow. And that was tough to get used to.
Yeah, I think that was the toughest thing for me to adapt to was the tires. You know, in the newer series we have like steel, almost steel tire. You know, they can last forever. You can just put them. You could drive. You basically drive one qualifying, two double races, and it's huge amount of you know miles on the tires. And in trucks and Xfinity and Cup, few laps. If you overdrive them, you're done. So I think that was the most hard thing for me to adapt to was the tires, to manage the tires, manage the car, and try to not you know do silly thing that will hurt you in the end of the stint.
No, for sure. Do you have now that from the outside anyways, you've got Monster Energy, you've got some pretty solid backing right now. Are you actively looking to try and find a cup ride or go back to the States?
Yeah, I always try to do that. Always try to find something. I think, you know, I know what I'm good at. I know I'm extremely good in road courses. Like, I felt like I proved that on my races while I was in the States, either Xfinity or Cup. And I know that my best opportunity will be in one of those road courses that one of those three national championships. So I'm always actively trying to find some sponsors, but at the same time, I cannot stay in the NASCAR Wheel and Euro Series for so many years. I'm there for almost 8 years, you know.
Yep.
I came into this championship when I was single. I'm married now. I think I changed my whole life while I was driving the same championship. I won 4 championships already. I'm the most, the winnest driver and any kind of record. So I felt like I'm feeling like I'm done with this championship. I need to find something else. But at the same time, I cannot find anything in the States. So I'm in like a weird place, a weird situation where I don't want to drive anymore in the Euro Series, but I have nothing else to do. So I'm trying right now to, I don't know, find a touring car or doing something else at the same time while I'm still looking for some ride in the States.
Yeah, that would be good. I'm looking to do some sports car racing. I think it would be fun.
What kind of cars?
Doesn't matter. Wherever I can find a ride, you know.
Do you have like a endurance championship, like GT championships and things like that in Canada?
Yeah, I mean, we'd probably just end up doing something in the States. And I think they come up, well, I don't know when they were the last time they were at Mosport, but that would be the best way to start is
Oh
to
man, drive
like
Mosport
GT4
with a
Mosport.
GT car?
Yeah.
Ah, that must be
Oh
with a,
yeah.
you know, prototype car. Oof, that must be like amazing feeling.
Oh yeah.
Really.
Crazy fast. I got in a guy let me drive his LMP3 car there this year for a little bit of a test, a couple laps.
Like
It
you,
was
I guess you
crazy.
really feel the compression, you know,
Oh.
like the G-force.
Crazy corners that in the NASCAR, you know, you're braking for, you're upshifting and not even lifting in the in the
Yeah.
downforce car. It's good.
Yeah, I wish I can do that. I wish to. I think as older as I get, you know, I'm getting older and older, and I think I mean I'm getting into really like endurance races. I really like love endurance racing now. A year ago, I won a big 24 hours race with a prototype car, and I felt like this is a new challenge that I want to feel. You know, like sharing the car with other drivers and waking up in 4 a.m. to do your own stint. So I think this is a good opportunity also for me to look for.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think there's a lot of longevity there. You know, as you're 40 or 50, even
Yeah.
you can still be really competitive, especially with the driver rating system. So, yeah, that's something I'm looking at too, for sure. You were, I don't know how many years ago it was, but you were athlete of the year. Was that like a pretty big deal?
It is a pretty big deal. Here in Israel, they choose the soccer player of the year, football. I don't know
Yeah, yeah.
how you
Yeah,
call it, but we call it football.
yeah.
Soccer player of the year, the basketball player of the year, the Olympic athlete of the year, and now they add a new category, which is the best the motorsports athlete of the year. And
Cool.
I was the first one to win it back in 2016, and it was a big big step, you know, big step for the Israeli motorsports in general. Like, there is some kind of recognition from the government, from the people, from the media, from everybody that motorsports is a thing now. So that was a big thing.
Right. You're mentioning you're getting older, but I mean, still not that old. You're only a year older than me. But
I'm
I saw,
39, man. I'm like.
yeah, it's old. It's old. I saw, saw a video where you're doing like hyperbaric chamber and stuff like
Yeah,
that.
you found it on YouTube.
Yeah. What was that all about?
Well, that's my secret.
Ah.
Honestly, that's my secret. You know about the
No,
hyperbaric.
explain it.
It's too hard in English,
Okay.
but it's a treatment that you know, you go into a chamber. They put you in like high 2 bars of pressure with
Yep,
100%.
oxygen.
No, but you have to breathe 100% oxygen. Usually, they used to treat divers. You know, when you
Yep,
dive,
yep, yep,
when you
yep.
go up too fast. I don't know what you call it.
It's called the bends, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, they. they found out here in Israel, they did some research, and they found out that if you do that with two atmosphere and you breathe oxygen, 100% oxygen for 2 hours every day for 60 days, it will generate new brain cells, or it will start like making you really like your whole body transfer, because the pressure makes the blood cells going really small, and they can go into like places that blood never go, and bring back into life. So people with huge injuries, like people on wheelchairs and after accident and things like that, they used to treat to this to go into the hyperbaric chamber, and it's changed their life. And for athletes, it's also a big deal. So I know that everybody today, like from the Olympic team in Israel up to Djokovic and big athletes name Ronaldo and people like that, they use the hyperbaric chamber on a daily basis just to have a better recovery, better fun brain functioning, those kind of skills. It was extremely demanding. You need to go there for 60 days, which is not so easy. 2 days, you just sit in some sort of like jail, I would call it. It's like some weird cell, the chamber. And yeah, it was pretty tough. But I saw the MRI scan of my brain before and after, and it's just amazing. It's growing by 20%, and some places are even 40% better than what they used to be before the treatment.
Yeah, I think I've heard about it, and it, again, I heard about it because it was big in Israel. And so what did you, I guess, what did you notice any real differences, like as far as, your brain or how you felt or any like lingering injuries, anything like that?
I never felt it directly. I never came out of the treatment and it's like, whoa, my hands are moving fast. No, and also not on the simulator, which is one of my favorite activity out of motorsports, is driving on a simulator. I never felt anything, but eventually on the racetrack, I was always one step ahead of everybody. Like my fitness was the highest level. I was at the best of myself this year. So I have no explanation for that. It's either myself getting married or the treatment.
Well, it could be either, right?
For sure.
So you're are you gonna go back to the hype, like to the chamber? Is that government funded, or do you have to pay for that?
Usually you have to pay for that. With myself, I had a good connection with a professor, and I was kind of like his own research. He did a lot of researches on PTSD, people with PTSD or some kind of injuries, athletes, fighter pilots. He wants to really see like how it affects the brain. And a race car driver, I think, was he really likes the idea of a race car driver. I was kind of a research for him. So I don't know if I will do it again in the future, but I'm recommending that for everybody who really wants to push their limits.
Okay, I'll have to look it up, but I mean, man, like 60 days in a row is a big commitment. Can you be like, can you watch a movie in there?
Yeah, you can watch a movie.
Okay.
They really like encourage you to do like brain games. You know those web games that you can play, and memory games and those kind of stuff, because you sit there for two hours every day, you get nuts. And you also sit like with a oxygen mask, and you cannot bring anything inside you, because you have 100% oxygen. The smallest spark will bomb the whole thing, So it's also a really strict area, so you cannot do too many things. It's just the most boring thing in the world, but you do the job, you know.
I'll look it up. You do a lot of iRacing, you were saying. When did you get on iRacing, and do you think that has helped your racing and your ability?
Yeah, for sure. I got actually into racing also with simulators. Like when I was a kid, I really loved the simulator, like proper games. Like not I'm not talking about Formula One games. I'm talking about like simulators.
Right.
At that time was Grand Prix Legend and the NASCAR 2002 and 2003 were at that time was highly like good simulators. And up until today, I'm spending like four hours a day on a simulator. I just love
Really?
it. Yeah, I
Wow.
just love it. And not only on iRacing, but also rFactor, Assetto Corsa, our racing room experience,
Holy
different kind
cow.
of stuff.
So
Yeah,
do
I actually
you.
was I was in a, like a esport team. Like, I never thought I will get money out of simulators, but I was actually getting paid for driving simulators, for doing what my favorite activity, you know. So it
Wow.
was a good deal.
Do you like will you do that going forward? Will you still stay a part of a team and try and can you really make a living on the
No.
simulator?
No, but it's just the fact that you're making money, kind of money, even small, just from playing video games, yeah? I'm
Yeah.
talking about playing video games. It just makes me happy, you know?
Yeah.
And then my wife tell me like why I'm playing, like why I'm on the simulator. It's like, sorry, I'm working, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good excuse.
I'll tell my wife that tonight. I gotta go to work. Elon makes money on the
Yeah.
simulator, so I gotta try
Yeah.
too.
And I never thought, like 2 years ago, I never thought I would make any money out of iRacing. And suddenly I part of the team and I won like a big championship in iRacing, the Pro Invitational Championship, iRacing, NASCAR, whatever they call it.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, I also won some money, so it was even better.
Do you see, iRacing has obviously exploded since the pandemic, and even for myself, I went from not really using it to now I have a simulator set up and it's great. And more people are on it. Do you see it, growing to the point where people le are legitimately watching it as a series and people are, really actually trying to make a living? Like, do you think the virtual world kind of really steps into the real world soon?
During the pandemic, I really thought the future will be eventually, like I'm talking like let's theoretically think about 50 years from now, we all sit in our own small cube in our house and be connected here into the simulator. But people in this era, people just they cannot hold watching a full race, in my opinion. You need to feel, smell, watch, see that in your own eyes, motorsports in general. And I don't think that in the near future, the simulators will have a bigger impact in motorsports. I hope not, But it's
Yeah,
the same also
I
with the electrical car, If we all know the future will be electrical cars, but we just don't want to accept it,
Yeah, no, it'll take a while, and I agree, it's you go to the racetrack and so often, I'll bring my friends out to Mosport to watch a race who have never been to the racetrack before, and it blows their mind. Like they've seen it on TV, but they're there in person and it's they had no idea, and I think that is the key factor with motorsports is seeing it in person. There's it's like
Yeah.
going to, it's like seeing, I don't know, monster trucks live or something, like something just crazy.
Yeah. I think also especially in NASCAR, I remember when I watched my first cup race. It blows my mind.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I used to see cars going really quick, but there is something, I think maybe in the body at that time with the Camry or the Chevy Impala or SS, whatever it was,
Yep.
going 200 miles. This really blows my mind. Like Toyota Camry go 200 miles. I think it's the body that makes it like extremely weird and blows my mind when I watch my first coppers.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Huh.
Yeah, if you see like a Lamborghini, a Ferrari, it's like it suits well, you know, it's supposed to fit together 200 miles in an exotic car, but a family car going to and 200 miles, I have to say, it looks extremely quick, and the car is impossible if you ever, I guess you do, stand next to a cop car. It's just impossible to stand there without protect
Yeah,
your ears,
for
and
sure.
you really need to feel that your everything pumping in your body.
Yeah, for sure. I asked a couple of my other buddies this: if you could take any form of racing, any kind of car, and elevate it to the level that Formula One is, you know, it would be the peak motorsports. What would it be? So I guess, you know, really, what car would you love to race as the highest level? You know, it could be go-karts, it could be lawnmowers, it could be sports cars. What kind of car would you like to see the world on the world stage that is Formula One?
It's a tough question. I think the Australian V8 supercars. Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, oh
It's
yeah.
I think this is the combination between GT cars, sports car, and stock car. A lot of time I felt like a lot of similarity between those cars, like stock car, NASCAR, and the V8. When you watch them jumping on the curbs in those one of those street tracks that they race, I think this is the most amazing motorsports to watch. It's just beautiful to watch. You know, this is the only motorsport that I can watch and say like, this is like, I really want to drive that. You know, even if it's the steering wheel is in the wrong place of the car, I still want to drive that. And
Yeah.
I wish that will be even more popular in Europe, you know, in worldwide, that you have more cars that have the. And I think the Euro NASCAR is the closest championship to this to the V8 supercars.
Right. Why did the Euro Series do away with the ovals? Was it just too tough? Like I watched one race where you go in the Netherlands, I think, and it was a decent track.
Yeah. No. They're just not good enough, in my opinion. That track in the Netherlands, it's a decent track. It's a good track. I love it. But you need to be really quick. You need to drive as close as possible to the wall. And we're just not used to that. We're not used to that. Simple as that. And some of the racers were just like, you know, like wreck fest. You know, like people are just smashing into each other and like massive crashes. And I think they stopped with that. I hope one day that we will come back into those kind of ovals, but I think we're good in the road courses, and I think we need to stick to that for now. Just that the level, yeah. I always, as I said, you cannot take a European driver and put him in an oval. This is my personal opinion. Even when Formula One drivers try to do that, even it's Kimi Raikkonen or Nelson Piquet Junior or Villeneuve, you will, in my opinion, you will never have the same success as an American kid that grew up turning left either on dirt or asphalt. It's just impossible to beat them. They're just used to that. They know, and it's the other way around. I mean, if you take an oval driver and put him in a European tough championship on road course, I guess you have no chance. And they
Yeah.
tried a couple of times and she just had no chance. And it's same around. I mean, I drove my first oval and I felt like I want to shit my pants.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's the biggest contrast. Well, for starters, it's hard to jump between any discipline. But the biggest contrast for sure, I remember probably the same time as you, my first real oval season was 2015 in the Canadian series. And I said to my crew chief after the first race, I said, "This is a different sport. I've never done this before. It's
Yeah,
a totally different sport."
exactly. And I did my first track oval, my first oval race in the States was in tracks in Homestead, and it's the same concept. When the tires get like too old, you need to ride next to the wall, and the fear that I had going into the corner, knowing that I need to drive that this close to the wall, really freaks me out. And I remember during the race, I felt like I don't want to do it. You know, like I want to crash the car just to stop the race. Maybe I will stop, like I will just stop in the pit lane and just jump out of the car. But I really felt like I have no time. And then, you're running in the back, and then the leader, Kyle Larson at that time, was driving, passing you. And riding next to the wall, sliding the truck this far from the wall, sliding. And at that moment, I realized, so like, all right, I don't have the talent. I'm sorry, but I don't have the talent to do that. But I think it's the more you drive, the better you get, the more confidence you have. It was my first time on oval, immediately jumping into this track. I had no chance from the beginning.
Yeah, it's a different deal. And like I was saying though, even on a lesser level, you take even Max Verstappen or Leclerc right now and you put them fresh into a go-kart, they probably won't win the world championship. There'll be a go-kart racer who will. You know? It's tough just to jump into any series and go and win without a little bit of seat time.
I disagree with that because I think go-kart and Formula One is kind of the same thing.
Sure.
Oval is a different story. Like
I agree.
it's it's a different philosophy, a different concept. You need to do different thing that your brain never done before. Like I don't know, you go back on throttle and as I said, the front will go up or you will get more grip or weird stuff, and it's a different story, and it's for me it's a different sport.
Yeah.
Oval racing and road courses are totally different type of racing.
So you've started a race team, and if we look down the road 20 years from now, what are you going to be doing?
Hopefully will be the next, Roger Penske.
Okay.
No, I'm joking, but yeah, trying to develop the Israeli motorsports and bring a successful racing team with the young drivers, and running a good business, and hopefully, going even racing in Europe or in the Middle East, whether it's Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and those kind of places. Who knows? It's 20 years from now. It's as a race car driver, I always think about the next season.
Yeah.
More than 1 year, my brain's like shutting down. So yeah, I hope I will be a successful team owner.
That's good. That's good. And you're just married. Your wife is on board for the motorsports lifestyle.
Well, I met her on a racetrack. She
Oh.
was yeah, my wife was TV the sports channel journalist, and
Okay.
she came to one of my races to cover that, and we had an interview, and this is how we met. So she came from, she know what motorsports is, and she's together with me in everything. She today she's working in the news channel, so even today she's following me to the races and doing articles about racing. So I think she's in.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, it's a good thing that your wife can understand the motorsports bug.
For sure. For sure. Where do you watch? Can you watch the races on YouTube, the Euro Series, or on
Yeah,
some
you
website?
can.
Okay.
YouTube, I think Facebook.
Yep.
You can watch everything live. Hopefully, I will be there next year. But I don't know. We will see. Hopefully, I will
Right.
be in the States.
Yeah, for sure. And if you ever have the opportunity, you should get in the Pinty's car at Mosport.
Yeah,
I
I
think
think
it'll
we
be
talked
fun.
about it. We definitely need to do that, you know?
Yeah,
Like,
before you're too old.
I mean, let's push for that. I really want to do some Penske's racing in Canada, and you go to Europe and taste what tough racing is.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Absolutely. Oh, that'd be good. Do you have advice? And I guess you're in a unique position, so maybe I'll ask it two ways. Do you have advice for young guys who want to make a living as a race car driver, and then also, young Israelis who want to make a living as a race car driver?
go to college. No, but from my experience, it's just patient. You just need to be patient and, you know, do your own stuff, working hard, and try to, as I found my ride in NASCAR, you just need to never stop searching and trying to connect to different people. Doesn't matter where. Unfortunately, today, motorsports is more about, you know, your lifestyle, your media, your social media, your connection with people. And I think this is the most important right now. This is, if I need to suggest for a young kid what to do, is like start working hard on your racing and develop your social media. Unfortunately,
Yeah, become a
I wish
YouTuber.
we can go back to like the 90s or the 80s, you know.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't know. It allows more people to do it, people who may have never been discovered, so it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, but you also miss a lot of talents that maybe have the opportunity to be the next champion, but you just suck on Instagram. You know, like, it's just not good on social media, and he will lose his sponsor or whatever.
Yeah,
So, yeah, I'm, it's a
well,
balance, you know.
you're not bad at it.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I am. I am. I mean, now I have my wife to do the social media, like following me on the racetrack. But I'm also, I think I got to the place that I just don't want to do it. I want to really drive and, you know, racing. And I don't care about the social media too much. People will follow me if they will like my success and they will like my racing.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
And not my lifestyle, you know. I'm not a Jordan Taylor or one of those cool
Yeah,
drivers that you watch on Instagram. It's like, that's funny.
no, he's good. He puts a lot of work into it.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's a full-time job, you know, to work on social media, and I appreciate that. He's doing that in a good, in a, the best way for
Yeah.
a race car driver.
For sure. For sure. He's putting in the effort to entertain all the race car drivers.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Cool, man. I'll let you go. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, and good to see you again after, I don't know, 6, 7 years
Yeah, it's
since the
been too
last
long.
time we met.
Yeah. 2016, probably 17.
I'm getting old.
Yeah. Adios.
Ciao.